So let's move on now, talk about pancreatic cancer. And this is one of the newer entries into the PARP field, Mike, and you've been a leader in the research. We now amazingly have a bunch of trials, randomized trials coming out that we'll mention. Mike, can you talk a little bit about your vision of sort of the genomic profile of pancreatic cancer? Again, you go into that in your talk, but maybe just kind of comment on how you see a pancreatic cancer, for example, compared to ovarian or breast in terms of, again, sort of BRCA-ness or DNA repairness.
Yeah, our numbers are actually not too dissimilar from what I heard for prostate cancer, where about 17 to 25% of pancreatic cancers harbor some form of DNA damage response and repair mutations. Now, of those, it's about 5 to 7% that are germline BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutated. Pancreas cancer is more BRCA2 mutated than BRCA1 mutated. But there's an additional probably 4 to 6% that have somatic BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations. And then there's about 10 to 12% of pancreatic cancers that have mutations in one of the many other DNA damage response and repair mutations. You don't necessarily know if those confer sensitivity to PARP inhibitors the way they might seem to in prostate cancer, and it's an active area of study and exploration.
In general, ideally, where does a PARP inhibitor fit in the management of pancreatic cancer, and which one or ones?
Yeah, we're so desperate for new therapies that we'll grasp anything in pancreatic cancer. So we're jealous of breast cancer and ovarian cancer colleagues and the benefits that they've seen. The only real FDA label approval in pancreatic cancer is with olaparib because of the phase 3 POLO study. And it was very specifically labeled in the maintenance setting after platinum-based therapy, after non-progressing on platinum-based therapy for germline BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutated pancreatic cancer. So essentially, if you've started a patient on a platinum-based therapy, FOLFOX, FOLFIRINOX, GemCis, they've had stable disease or responding disease after a few months, then you can put them on maintenance olaparib if they have an underlying germline BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutation. However, there are active ongoing studies trying to broaden that. There are studies looking at second-line therapy with PARP inhibitors in patients who've never progressed on platinum-based therapy. There's actually a new adjuvant study that's about to open up soon. There are locally advanced trials as well, all focused on giving these PARP inhibitors for patients who have the underlying DDR mutations.
We see a lot of patients with pancreatic cancer who don't have metastatic disease, Mike, but they're not curable by surgery. They have locally advanced disease. If those patients have BRCA germline mutations, would you consider a PARP inhibitor in that situation?
I mean, it is a completely off-label use, but I absolutely would. If it's particularly like a locally advanced unresectable pancreatic cancer, if they've had, you know, 4 or 6 months of FOLFIRINOX and their disease is stabilized, but you know that you're not going to be able to get rid of it surgically, then by all means, I would put them in the olaparib maintenance category.
Can you kind of give maybe just sort of a gestalt, Mike, on the benefit from your point of view in a patient? You sit down with a patient, you're going to consider taking a PARP inhibitor as opposed to maybe just being observed or maybe getting maintenance chemotherapy. What you say to them, does it bring up the possibility of long-term response, even cure? Is this just a few extra months? How do you position it?
Yeah. So one thing we focus on is that the benefits of taking an oral therapy and being able to be off the every 2 week FOLFIRINOX regimen, which can really beat patients up quite a bit. So that's an emphasis for us. Of course, the trial was approved based on a progression-free survival benefit, not an overall survival benefit, but patients were compared to placebo. What we don't know is, for example, if olaparib would have been compared to maybe a toned-down version of chemotherapy, such as maintenance 5-FU, would the magnitude of benefit have been as great? We just don't know. But the other benefit is that there are some patients, while the median progression-free survival was only about 4 months benefit, in reality, there are some patients who have had long-term benefit. And talking to some of my colleagues, they have patients who've been on PARP inhibitors 3, 4, 5 years with metastatic pancreatic cancer. To my knowledge, we don't have the luxury of being able to take these patients off PARP inhibitors, so they're not likely to be truly cured of their cancer.
So, you know, actually, when I was working with Mike on his presentation, he made a bunch of comments to me that were so striking. We decided to put this on the podcast series. And the thing that was most striking that you said, Mike, that really shocked me, I had no idea, was the data that you were involved in gathering suggesting quite a few patients with pancreatic cancer in the United States don't get treatment, don't get anti-cancer therapy. And when you talk about the possibility of, you know, a longer-term remission, that seems kind of sad. Any comment?
Yeah, it was shocking to me. I had no idea either. You know, we were working with an insurance company that had access to all these patient databases, And it turns out that 60% of patients with pancreatic cancer never receive any treatment at all in this country. It's really shocking.
So let's take a look at this case from UNC presented. And again, you can check out the video for more details. But Mike, I think this is, you know, a fairly typical situation of how it's used. 67-year-old man presents with a metastatic disease, found to be BRCA1. At this point, I think every patient with metastatic pancreatic cancer is getting, at a minimum, germline testing, if not somatic testing. He was found to have a BRCA1 germline mutation. He got treated with a common first-line therapy, FOLFIRINOX, often what is used in younger patients, but importantly, that includes a platinum agent, oxaliplatin, which we know has great benefit in patients with BRCA germline mutations. This patient was another situation where it took some work to try to get the patient on a dose of drug that was okay. He had problems with the taste and GI problems. He did have what seemed to be a response. He did have some GI symptoms, but they were able to keep him on the drug for, I think it was about 8 months. He eventually passed away. But I'm just kind of curious, Mike, about a couple things. First of all, this patient had some GI problems, but they were able to manage it. But we talked about the fact that PARP inhibitors as a class cause GI problems. And of course, we know that pancreatic cancer is associated with a lot of GI symptomatology. Do you find more problems with PARP inhibitors with pancreatic cancer than other cancers because of that, Mike?
It's a good question I don't know the answer to. I mean, it's so confounded by the fact that pancreatic cancer patients have so many baseline GI symptoms. But I think the one encouraging thing that we clearly saw, again, from the POLO data, was that while patients who received olaparib definitely had more GI symptoms and more of them paused treatment with the olaparib, virtually all of them were able to continue treatment at a lower dose. There was no greater treatment, stopping treatment just because of toxicity. So it seems like lower dose is really the way to go to be able to get these patients through the treatment.
So I'm going to move on in a second, talk about prostate cancer and see if we can kind of paint a picture of what's going on in general with these four diseases. But I do want to bring one other thing up. And again, it's in the podcast if you want to check out Mike's comment on it. But I just want to briefly bring it up because I hadn't heard this before. You mentioned this to me in the past, Mike. We brought it back up again, which I thought was really interesting, which is you mentioned the use of medical marijuana in these patients and the fact that, and I've heard this from other people who treat pancreatic cancer patients, that it seems to be helpful. You talked to me about the fact that edible products seem to be more acceptable to patients, particularly older patients. Any comments, Mike?
Yeah, actually, my only frustration for my 1 year down in MD Anderson was that Texas was not a medical marijuana state, because really I've seen benefit to these patients in virtually all of them who had access to it. Less nausea, less pain, and to some degree a general sense of well-being. Purely anecdotally, patients have told me that they seem to do better with the edibles, but that is not based on any data that I've seen, just my patients, what they've reported to me.
So we're going to move on in a second and talk about prostate cancer. One other question, Mike, in your talk, you also talked about another PARP inhibitor, rucaparib, and pancreatic cancer. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think this just is emphasizing the fact that this is probably going to be a class effect of the benefit of the PARP inhibitors in BRCA and PALB2 and potentially other DDR mutated cancers. One important thing about Dr. Rice's study here is the fact that she actually included somatic BRCA mutated patients, and you can see that there were patients with somatic BRCA mutations that did also benefit. I think the only real factor that we know of that predicts for a lack of response to PARP inhibitors is actually patients whose disease has frankly progressed on platinum-based therapy. There's now several lines of evidence that suggest that if you've got a patient that disease progressed while on platinums, not that they've ever been exposed to platinums in the past, but it progressed while on platinum-based therapy, that they're very unlikely to benefit from a PARP inhibitor.